Grace, mercy, and peace be to you from God our Father and our Lord Jesus Christ. The journey continues. For the last two Sundays, we took a couple of side trails in order to celebrate the Lutheran Reformation and the Festival of All Saints. But while we were off sightseeing, Jesus was still making his way to Jerusalem that he had set his face to go to, where there was a cross waiting for him, just as Luke says in chapter 9. Now this morning, we realize that he's arrived. He's there. He's in Jerusalem. Palm Sunday has already happened, and it's Holy Week. From the accounts of all four of the Gospels, it's pretty clear that Jesus spent a good deal of his time during Sunday through Thursday of Holy Week while he was in Jerusalem at the temple teaching. Luke writes, and he was teaching daily in the temple. And great crowds went to the temple to hear this rabbi speak. And Luke writes, and all the people were hanging on his words. On one such occasion, some were speaking of the temple, how it was adorned with noble stones and offerings. And this is right where we re-enter this journey with Jesus. This morning, we are one of those, in one of those crowds, who hang on his every word. The temple in Jesus' day had been fairly recently refurbished by Herod the Great, and it was an architectural marvel. It was Passover week, which meant that many Jews came from all over the world to Jerusalem to celebrate the Feast of Unleavened Bread that culminates in the Passover. And so they in particular would have marveled at this magnificent building that they could call their temple, where they worship their God. It was, one author says, immensely opulent. It was the massive size of the stones that the temple was built on and the huge high pillars that supported the walls and the ceiling that got the most attention and that were the most awesome. They gave the unmistakable feeling of permanence and stability. The offerings were all of those tapestries and all of those pieces of artwork that would have hung from the walls and those columns. And it would have included the holy vessels made out of gold and silver that were part of the temple and that were the offerings of the people. Jesus seizes on the comment that is made in this crowd as the opportunity for more teaching, and he takes it up as a point to begin a lecture that predicts that this very building will become like a cardboard box in a rainstorm. As for these things that you see, the days will come when there will not be left one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. And if that's true, and it is true, and it came to pass just 37 years after Jesus spoke these words, then if this is true, and it is true, then they really, 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 really ought to rethink what is truly permanent and stable and beautiful in this world. And if they should find such a thing, then they should marvel at it like they have never marveled at this temple. From the destruction of the indestructible temple, Jesus goes on to announce that the stability of society will crumble like rotted wood, and that the news is going to be all about such things as wars and tumults, and that nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. And so you better rethink what it is that makes for peace. Peace in the world, peace in your country, peace in your community, peace in your own home. You better rethink what it means to be a kingdom and to live in a kingdom that can indeed truly deliver you from all evil. Then Jesus goes on to say that even the religious freedoms that you once enjoyed and thought were so permanent and secure are going to evaporate like mist in the morning. They will lay hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to synagogues and prisons, and you will be brought before kings and governors for my name's sake. You will be delivered up even by parents and brothers and relatives and friends, and some of you will be put to death. You will be hated by all for my name's sake. And so you had better think seriously about the religion that you practice and why you practice it and what it's all about and what you expect really to gain from it all. And then he goes on. Even the creation itself is not nearly so permanent and secure as you thought it was. There will be great earthquakes, and in various places, famines and pestilences, and there will be terrors and great signs from heaven, and there will be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars, and on the earth, distress of nations in perplexity because of the roaring of the sea and the waves. People fainting with fear and foreboding of what is coming on the world, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And so there will be no escape. There'll be no place to hide, no insurance policies to cover the damage. And so maybe it's time that you start rethinking what your life is really all about and what everything that you hold to be so precious in your life is really all about. Because it's all going to be shaken and destroyed. And what will your life be when it's all gone? When the very ground you stand on gives way? Because if we have been hanging on his words, we would also have certainly realized by this time that everything that Jesus said to the crowd of people at the temple in Jerusalem in the year 33 AD could just as easily have been addressed to the crowd that is gathered in this temple here this morning 2,000 years later, and maybe even more so than they. Aren't we the ones, after all, who put such great trust and confidence in the permanence and the security of the things of our own hands? Who can even begin to imagine that there could possibly ever be a day when not one stone of the White House would be left upon another, or that California or Florida would fall into the sea and cease to exist? Aren't we the ones whose hopes for a secure and enjoyable future are based on a rising stock market, which of course always goes up and up and up, but that one day will be worth nothing? Which of us could even begin to imagine a day when preachers are arrested and handed over to the authorities for preaching sound doctrine and calling sin just what the Bible calls sin? And what would we ever do if the unthinkable thing ever happens and comes to pass? What would we ever make of this religion that we hold so dear if we were to actually one day lose our tax-exempt status? And what if this sanctuary that we have just refurbished and re-roofed, what magnificent ceiling boards, would be taken away tomorrow in a hurricane or a tornado? And maybe it's time for us to think seriously about what is truly permanent and secure and the basis of our stability and hope in this world, and what this religion that we practice is really all about. Because aren't we the ones who are constantly being bombarded with the news of wars and tumults, and nation rising against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and great earthquakes, and famines and pestilences, and terrors and great signs from heaven, and religious persecution, and people being slaughtered, and people on the run from their homes because they say that Jesus Christ is their Lord and they will not deny it. And distress of nations and perplexity because of the roaring of the sea and the waves. And people fainting with fear and with foreboding of what is coming on the world. And so in the midst of the cacophony of chaos, and as that which we thought was so permanent and infallible crumbles and gives way and the ground under our feet shakes, we hang on his words like little sheep who hear the voice of their shepherd amidst all the other voices. And we hear that still small voice say to his sheep, "Do not be terrified, for these things must first take place. And this will be your great opportunity to bear witness. And not a hair of your head will perish. By your endurance, you will gain your lives. And straighten up, raise your heads, because your redemption is drawing near." His sheep hear his voice. They hang on his words, the words of their good shepherd, because he is their permanence and their stability. They hang on his words because they know that though heaven and earth will pass away, my words will never pass away. I have said these things to you that in me you have may have peace. In the world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. As his sheep hear his voice and hang on his words, they begin to realize that his voice has never been that far from them all along, that he has been very near to them through it all. He has never left them nor forsake them, and he never will. He is their permanence and stability in a world that is falling apart at the seams. The noble stones of the temple that the crowd marveled at in Jerusalem is their shepherd. He is the stone that the builders rejected, but that has become the capstone. And all the sheep of this flock all agree that it is marvelous in our eyes. The immensely opulent temple that Herod built has been thrown down, and God has raised up the more immensely opulent new temple in the person of his Son, Jesus Christ, who lives and reigns to all eternity. And so while everyone else is fainting with fear and foreboding of what is coming on the world, this little flock that fears his name sees the Son of Righteousness rising with healing in its wings, and their Redeemer coming in the clouds with power and great glory. And while everyone else is fainting with fear, they go out leaping like calves from the stall. In the midst of a dying world, they straighten up, they raise their heads, and they sing to the Lord a new song, because he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have worked salvation for him. In other words, just what do the faithful do as this world comes to its end? Do they walk in idleness, as St. Paul said some were doing in the congregation at Thessalonica? Because after all, it's all coming to an end. What does it matter? Why bother? No, we go to work. We go to work with boldness and confidence, knowing that our redemption is drawing near. We go into this dying world and we work hard to make it a better place to live. And we carry out our God-given vocations as spouses and parents and citizens and workers and neighbors, as though this world were going to last another 2,000 years. Even though we know that wars and tumults will increase as time goes on, we work for peace and safety in society and in the world for everyone. Even though we know that there will be earthquakes and famines and pestilence in various places, we build beautiful buildings. And then we keep rebuilding homes and cities that have been destroyed. And we keep shipping and bringing food and medicine to the hungry and the diseased where there is pestilence. Why do we do this? Since we all know that it's all going to be destroyed in the end, we do this because this is what it means to love your neighbor. We do this because we bear witness. And this is our opportunity to do so. And the opportunities will increase and increase. Even as violence and persecution for the faith increase all the more, our opportunity to bear witness increases all the more. And we bear witness to the one true God, who where sin increased, increased his grace all the more. In these last days, at the end of time, we live in the present day. We live in the now, even as we await the final day that has not yet come. That final day when we will see our Good Shepherd come again in the cloud with great glory. Here today, in this temple made of wood, we straighten up, we raise our heads and our hearts, and we hold out our hands and we open our mouths, and we hang on his word that says, take and eat, take and drink. Your redemption is drawing as near to you as this bread and wine.